Welcome to Pretty Lies and Alibis. Let's seek the truth and travel the long road to justice together. What you know, alibiers, happy Thursday. Hope you're having a really good day. There's no court in the Wagner case today, so I thought it'd be a good day to hop on and do a mega series episode. It's been a minute. Before we get started, I want to give a big thank you to Janice and Amy for your donations. I really appreciate you guys. Song fact of the day, the Grateful Dead, man, they toured for decades, put out a ton of music, but they only had one top 10 hit on the Billboard Top 100 charts. That song was Touch of Grey, which only made it to number 6. Pretty surprising. And also, since we've done an episode on this, I just want to acknowledge the fact that on October 19th, it was 3 years since Tammy Daybell was murdered. And I know we're all very frustrated at the stop and start going on right now in this case, but sometimes these things take a lot of time, but no doubt justice will be served. It's just going to take a little longer than we had hoped. In the meantime, I hope her family and her kids are doing well. And it's got to be a very, very sad day every time the 19th rolls around, you know, for that family. So what's going on in the case? We don't really know. It's quiet. Lori had a status conference yesterday that was sealed. There was a motion to compel in her case, and we really don't know what that's about. Looks like there's a hearing tomorrow at 1:30. Came across my Vine status. Actually, also on Tuesday, there was a motion to seal the state's motion to determine conflict. It had a doctor's name on it, so I'm assuming this has to do with her evaluations that she's getting again to determine her competency. And remember, she's not been determined incompetent just yet. They're testing her, and it's not a guarantee that she's going to be incompetent. So we'll see what happens with that. I think for the long haul, though, things will be pretty quiet in this case until at least that's established. So we left off in February at the end. Lori had been arrested. Chad was moving out of the condo there in Hawaii, and their neighbors in Hawaii told Justin Lum that now that Chad had moved out, they were just glad they're finally gone. I'm sure it's, you know, probably just a really quiet, peaceful place. And then these two come rolling into town and bring the chaos with them. Also, we know that Chad was at the airport returning to Rexburg, and he told people who asked him that the kids were safe. So on the same day as where we left off, which was February 27th, one of Charles's sons, who did not want to be named, talked to Nate Eaton from East Idaho News about the text that Lori had sent to Charles's boys when he was murdered. He also talked about JJ saying that he loved to hang out and play with him and watch movies and run around. He said that normally JJ would call him all the time. Sometimes it would be 15, 20 times a day, which Kay said the same thing about JJ. He said it dropped to 2 or 3 times a day, and then it just stopped. And he said he figured he's just in school or something like that, and he never thought in a million years anything bad would ever happen to JJ or Tylee. He said about Lori that to him, she was more of an acquaintance than anything, even though he had spent a lot of time with her growing up on summer vacations and weekends and things like that, but he just never formed a bond. And I can see where that would be difficult. He also said the truth will come out, talking about the kids. At this point, they had not been found, as we know. And he said Lori needs to be held accountable. He also said he's been worried about his safety and his family safety because they don't know how many followers her and Chad have. And he said this needs to end. So at some point in February, the FBI contacted the Phoenix Police Department asking for information on the death of Joe Ryan, which is Tylee's biological dad and Lori's third husband. So we know ultimately they just ruled that that was a natural death. When they found him, unfortunately, he had been deceased for a while and he was pretty decomposed from what we've read, and they did keep some samples from that autopsy, but he was cremated. So I'll always wonder in my mind about Joe Ryan. So Also on the 27th, Melanie's has a custody hearing, and with her at that hearing is her aunt Summer, Zulema, and Ian. And at that hearing, her attorney was asking to hold Brandon in contempt, saying he had filed false information with the court. Brandon isn't there, and the judge said that all parties must attend, so they rescheduled that for March 26th. Justin Lum was there asking questions. Nobody answered anything. Her lawyer just said to respect the court or something to that effect. But outside the courthouse, he gave a statement that said Melanie is fond of her aunt. Her fondness has little to do with her religious beliefs, but more about the kind of person she thinks she is. Her attorney says that at that point, Melanie's had talked to the FBI three times and did not know where JJ and Tylee were. The same day, Dr. Phil and Nightline on ABC starts covering the case. I remember in February, all this, especially after the arrest, it seemed like every time you turned on some kind of a news special, there it was. It was finally just starting to take off and people were becoming aware of the missing kids. So February 28th, Chad rents a car from Salt Lake City to Rexburg. That same day, BYUI is contacted about Tylee. They confirm she was never a student, never enrolled, and they didn't know her. So February 29th, Chad gets back to Rexburg. He goes to Enterprise to return that rental car about 10:30 a.m. A man picks him up from there in a small blue car. Also that same day, Larry Woodcock is on Fox and Friends and just pleads to Chad directly and says, Chad, I know you're on your way back to Idaho. When you get there, please do a lot of soul searching. Somewhere in that vicinity, there are two children and we want them back safe. And we hope that you will have this come to Jesus meeting with yourself and address these issues as soon as possible. So on March 2nd, the FBI Mobile Command Unit arrives in Rexburg and they park behind the Rexburg PD. I remember when this happened, me and Fruit Loop both were like, this is just full effect now. This is all hands on deck. And you start to get, you know, worried at this point in the case. Me and Fruit Loop both were sort of back and forth. Were the kids okay? Were they not? And I think when the FBI shows up and she's been arrested for not producing the kids, we started to kind of have bad feelings. But at the same time, we really were hopeful that maybe they were in hiding. It was just really hard to tell at this point. You know, it was such a cult thing at that point. And to where I always say now, it was just more of a band of misfits as opposed to a cult. But cult stuff, you've heard of people being hidden. So that kind of was where we were for a while. Also, the day Chad gets back to Rexburg, the media starts to gather outside the Daybell home. And there was a sign on the door that said, we're not speaking with the media. And then they put up a sign that says, private property, no trespassing. At one point, one of Chad's sons goes outside to grab the mail, but doesn't talk to reporters. So on March 3rd, 2020, which is after Lori's been arrested, investigators get an anonymous email, which pretty much kind of confirms things that we now know but did not know back then. And it talks about Lori and Chad meeting, it says, technically September 23rd, 2019, through Jason Mao at Temple. Chad was told around that time that a special woman would come in his life. November 2018, together at this point, at the Mesa Preparing a People event, Chad and Lori are sealed to each other in Temple, where they traveled to another upper room and Moroni gave Lori to Chad. The Savior was there. Moroni and Chad both have been married to Lori in many other probations, and Lori is their favorite spouse. Lori has been on 21 planets and Chad 31, one of which he was a Holy Ghost. Chad has been on this earth 5 times, Lori 4. Chad also makes a portal into Lori's closet so she can visit him. At this time, Chad told Melanie he had no relationship or interest in Julie Rowe, and he also previously said he didn't want anything to do with Susan Freeman. She is somebody he had produced some of her books or put them on his label. Lori and Chad believe they're in charge of gathering the couples for the $144,000. They make charts of who the people are and who is sealed to who, and how many probations they've had and who they have been in past lives. This chart was on Chad's computer and in his email, so it is now public property. The 12 apostles are on this list. Tammy is on the list and was put down as being married to John the Beloved. And Chad calls Lori and tells her that Charles is now Ned Schneider. Lori tells Charles he has become a zombie. His spirit has been hijacked by an evil spirit, and his spirit is in limbo. He was hijacked yet again and became Garrett. Then he became another entity that had 10,000 to 20,000 zombies in him. During that time, Lori is completely open to Charles, who she thinks she is. When she met Chad, she had already been translated in her mind and stopped wearing garments because they're meant to be a protection and she no longer needs it. Charles files for divorce and does business trips to Texas. Lori receives a revelation that Charles will die in an accident on his way back home from Texas. He doesn't die, and Lori is frustrated and tells Melanie she better leave her house. She calls and has Alex come stay with her. The next morning, Charles is killed. Chad told Alex that he was the angel that had come and stopped Laman and Lemuel from hurting Nephi, and that he is now Lori's protector. Alec believed all of this, and Melanie believes he was her hitman and did all the killings. Charles had Lori committed to mental facility, and they tested her, and she told them who she was, translated part of the 144,000, and they let her go. July 11th, 2019, Charles is killed. September 2019, Lori moves to Rexburg with the kids. Melanie is aware that Chad and Lori has taken trips together while both of them are still married to their spouses. They took a trip to visit multiple temples and receive revelations on who is part of the 144,000. They get up early in the morning to walk around the BYU track together, holding hands and kissing. Tammy has become suspicious. Chad tells Lori that Tammy has now become a zombie. Lori, meanwhile, is telling Melanie she can't wait to have sex with Chad and how it's such an important part of who you are and everyone should be having it at least once a day. And once she was with Chad, they would be having it three times a day. Chad and Lori told Melanie that Alex, Kay, and Tylee have now become zombies. Lori withdrew them from school, and this was the last anyone saw them. October 2019, Tammy dies. Chad calls Melanie and tells her not to answer the phone because the police would be calling her because he told him the kids were with her. Melanie asked where the kids are, and he said they were with Kay. Later, police came to her house, and she told them what she knew. She started fearing for her life. She left her kids with her recently divorced husband and kid's father and went and stayed with David Warwick in Utah. They've been dating and are on Chad and Lori's chart. David becomes skeptical and wants out of it, sets her straight, and has her give a full report to police. She also records a conversation over the phone with Chad and Lori where she confronts them about their false beliefs and cheating on their spouses. Lori blows her off and quotes scripture of why Melanie is wrong. This was early January. November 2019, Chad and Lori married the day after Thanksgiving. It has question mark. Melanie receives an email from Lori full of beautiful pictures of their wedding on the beach. She didn't even know they had gotten married at this point. December 2019, Alex dies, possible blood clot in lung. Melanie says kids are most likely dead. All were probably killed by Alex. Melanie remembers that Lori and Chad were frustrated why Tammy had not died yet. Chad told Lori it's not that easy to get someone's spirit out of their body. At any time, Lori and Chad could tell the number of zombies that were in any given state, usually around 20,000 nationally. They also said two of the apostles are zombies. They also believe that it's abbreviated, SHTF is this year, and they could just wait it out in Hawaii and then come back. So I think that was written by Melanie Gibb, is what it was later determined. Justin Lum reports that deputies and investigators from Madison County Sheriff's Office are headed to Hawaii to bring Lori back to Idaho. Also, Chad's brother, Matt Daybell, is interviewed by Rexburg PD about the storage unit surveillance video. Kate also gives an interview to the Rexburg Standard Journal saying it's just another hurdle cleared. We've got a ways to go. I'm optimistic. I'm excited. I can finally lay eyes on her. Maybe now she'll start feeling the heat. I'm just ready to get this legal stuff taken care of. But the one answer I want is, where are the kids? And when asked about Chad saying the kids said they were, when asked about the kids saying they were safe, Kay said, you can be safe in heaven, you can be safe on earth. By saying someone's safe, it just depends on what their idea of safe is. She also talked about filing for guardianship back in January, and she said up until then, we hadn't filed anything, nor would we, if Lori wasn't doing all this crazy stuff. If she were stable, I would have never stepped between a mother and a child. So March the 4th, Lori has a status hearing in Hawaii. Idaho officials are on the island to get her, and she will leave the jail that afternoon on a red-eye flight. Lori's attorney says she will exercise her right to remain silent on the way back to Rexburg and doesn't want her questioned at any time during the transport. They also want to be notified of any change in those travel arrangements. And during an episode of Dateline, Shane Bishop tweeted out that Lori complained loudly about the conditions at the jail in Hawaii, and she was in there for 2 weeks. Lori's three Rexburg attorneys, Edwina Cox, Brian Webb, and Mark Means, file for a bond reduction for Lori and file a motion for all discovery and evidence from the state. There was a hearing for guardianship of JJ that was canceled. Kim Powell with Arizona Family News goes to Christopher Parrott's house, and he answers the door but says no comment. He wouldn't say if Chad was inside his house or not. And as Kim and her cameraman left, Christopher Parrott opens the door and takes a picture of them. So Lori's flight leaves the island around 11:30 p.m. Local time. And March 5th, the FBI releases the photos of JJ and Tylee, which shows Alex in the background in Yellowstone National Park. There was also that selfie with Lori and JJ. They release a picture of Alex's F-150 truck, and they request anyone who was in Yellowstone on September 8th, 2019 to submit photos and videos. The attorney who released a statement for Lori and Chad, whose name was Sean Bartholik, said he's no longer representing Lori, saying it would be a conflict of interest to represent both Lori and Chad. So Lori is extradited back to Rexburg. She flies on a commercial flight from Kauai to L.A., from L.A. to Seattle, and then Seattle to Boise. And I've actually been on a flight when they are transporting prisoners, and it's interesting. Usually they sit in the way back. They'll cover the detainees' hands if they're cuffed with like a jacket or something, and they are usually last to get off the plane every time I've seen it. So people were taking videos of her coming out of the holding room before boarding her flight. There were also some pictures taken of her walking on that tarmac. She's in a Kauai hoodie and leggings. And I swear, y'all, if I'm not mistaken, those flip-flops are close to the pair, if not the pair, that she bought the day Charles was murdered. But I'm not super certain. She has socks on, so it's a little hard to tell, but I zoomed in. So instead of driving from Boise to Rexburg, Lori is flown to Rexburg on a small law enforcement airplane to a small airport there in Rexburg. Guess who's waiting on the tarmac? Nate Eaton. And I love it because the first thing he says to Lori is, "Welcome back, Lori." And then he proceeds to ask the question that he's asked her nonstop since bumping into her in Kauai. "Where are the kids, Lori? Why won't you say where your kids are, Lori?" Love, Nate. So Lori is driven to the Madison County Jail. She arrives about 3:45 p.m. A new mugshot is taken. The press take photos of her going from the van into the building, and she's also wearing a bulletproof vest. So a detective reaches out to a friend of Melanise's asking if she's seen any indication Melanise may be ready to talk to authorities. The friend responds on March 9th that when she did reach out to her and asked about the kids, she told the friend if she had prayed about the situation with her family, she would know she has been working with authorities and telling them what she knows. She also says that she only needs those in her life that wouldn't base their beliefs and judgments off of rumors and what they see in the news. She told the friend she loved her and hopes she will discern the truth. The friend says she thinks Melanie's is pregnant and will reach out to her again, but might be that she's considered a dark person now. The investigator responds the next day on the 10th that Melanie's talking to authorities isn't what she professes it to be. He also confirms to the friend that she's pregnant and says they hopes that she'll come forward with the truth, but he feels that she's in super deep with Lori and will take those secrets to the grave for her. He said the group would place a dark tag on anyone who conflicts with their current belief system and says you should hear the things they've called investigators. And if not for the death and missing children, it would be comical. He says they all can't seem to understand how misguided they are. So Kay and Larry have a meeting with Madison County prosecutors this day, and Lori's attorneys request warrants and related documents. There were some court orders for the discovery that her attorneys wanted. They wanted unredacted police reports, handwritten notes, dispatch tapes. And now it's time for a word from our paid sponsor of the week, Gladskin. October is National Eczema Awareness Month. According to the Asthma and Allergy Foundation of America, while it's usually thought of as a childhood disease, around 16.5 million adults in the U.S. have eczema. And while it affects people in various ways, 51.3% of adults with atopic dermatitis say it limits their lifestyle, 39% say it causes them to avoid social interactions because of their appearance, and 43% say it affects their activities. Luckily, as you know, Gladskin is here to help. But what actually causes the itchiness, redness, inflammation, and discomfort in the skin is a disruption of the bacterial environment, also called the skin microbiome. Gladskin specifically works to target the imbalance in your skin's microbiome. But unlike other skin brands and prescription medications, Gladskin uses MicroBalance, a revolutionary protein that restores the balance of the good and bad bacteria that live on your skin so it can finally heal. It's so effective that 91% of users, adults and children, who tried their top-selling eczema cream reported significant improvement after just 7 days. Gladskin with MicroBalance is steroid-free, works without harsh ingredients, and is clinically proven to reduce eczema symptoms. It's even gentle enough for babies. So, if you've been frustrated with your treatment options, don't wait to try Gladskin. They're offering my listeners 15% off plus free shipping on your first order at gladskin.com/whattheworld. That's gladskin.com/whattheworld for 15% off plus free shipping. gladskin.com/whattheworld. So then we have Lori's initial appearance in Rexburg. This is when she comes out with the super red lipstick, lots of makeup, curly hair. And as far as family goes, Kay, Larry, Colby, Kelsey, and Brandon were in the courtroom. Chad was in attendance. He sat on her side of the courtroom. And I very distinctly remember the reaction of people sitting around him as he's walked in, because he was brought in after everybody was seated and he was kind of escorted. This is also the appearance where Kay gives her the laser eyes. That's that top right picture there. Well, not top right. It's second to the last picture on the right. This is she was represented by Elcox, Webb, and Means. Judge Edens was on the bench. This is when she came out in the pink handcuffs as well. When asked how she would like to be addressed, she said Mrs. Daybell. So Lori's attorney, Edwina L. Cox, said this was a court of law and not a court of public opinion, and bail must match the charges Lori's currently facing. She said Lori was presumed innocent as she stands before the court today. This is not a loose guideline. This is a foundational principle of the American criminal justice system. Are we going to let our citizens' rights be dictated by what appears in the media? A $5 million bond is unreasonable, is astronomically excessive, and is a functional equivalent of holding Lori without bond. This is a violation of her constitutional rights. She also goes on to remind the court of a recent murder case there where the bond was set at $1 million. And she points out that Lori was not accused of a violent crime at this point. She asked the bail be lowered to $10,000. And a very beardless Rob Wood talks about Lori being a flight risk, saying she quickly left Arizona after Charles was murdered and immediately left Idaho after the welfare check about the location of JJ and Tylee. He also said the defendant tried to mislead law enforcement about the whereabouts of her children. And in furtherance of that, she tried to convince a family friend to say the child was there with them, even though they weren't. He talks about her history of defying court orders, with the most recent being not producing the children. He says she also continued to collect Social Security payments after she left the state of Idaho without the children. He also added the most aggravating factor about this case and the reason there is so much media attention is because the children are still missing. The defendant has not only misled law enforcement in their efforts to find the children, but she has completely and utterly refused to aid police in finding the children, even before charges were filed. Judge Edens ultimately lowers that bond to $1 million, and Lori was placed in a smaller part of the jail, but not in segregation. If she made bail, the condition was she had to pay 10% or what kind of added up to be $100,000 cash. Chad reached out to several bondsmen who refused flat out to work with them. One bond company told East Idaho News they wouldn't work with her because they wouldn't want to risk losing potential clients down the road due to the negative publicity surrounding that case. They set a preliminary hearing for Lori for March 18th and 19th. And Chad leaves the courthouse with his attorney in a separate exit from the rest of the people, which I thought was wrong. He was a citizen. He was not accused of anything at that time. He was the spouse of the defendant, but he should have had to walk in and mingle with everybody. But I think Chatty Boy was a little worried he might get some questions, especially from family members. And Chad, every time I've seen him kind of approached on camera, he is the one that gets nervous. Lori's the one that's calm as a cucumber. So he also is let out of a gate that has to be manually opened and closed. And Kay and Larry gave an interview on the steps of the courthouse after that initial hearing. And Larry said, "This isn't about whether I like Lori. This isn't about whether I like Chad. This is about two children." So March 7th, investigators note that in Lori's iCloud, she has someone stored as Spencer's wife and calls that number on November 3rd and 4th. At some point over this same weekend, Fox 10 Phoenix reported that Colby talks to Lori over the phone as she's in jail and tells her to do the right thing. He told Justin Lum that the conversation was emotional, with Lori saying that she loved him but couldn't say more. I didn't go back to check and see if that was one of the voicemails on that Netflix series, Sins of Our Mother, but it was kind of something similar. March 8th, KSL-TV airs a special called Exhumed Evidence on Tammy's murder and when they exhumed her body. Let me get this name, y'all. Rod Oldroyd from Springville City Administration Services said, they exhumed her as confidential as they could. Many other people were in attendance, a witness, a county attorney, the sheriff from Idaho, sheriff from Utah, coroners, coroner's assistants, funeral directors. All of that had to be done. I've known Chad and Tammy for a long, long time, as many people in Springfield have to this day. If I thought of Tammy Daybell, it would be that she's smiling and she's happy. That's how she was. So sad to think about that last interaction that her friend had with her at school where Tammy was just distant. So on March 9th, the president of Beehive Bail Bonds in Salt Lake City tells ABC4 Utah that he believes there's not a bonding agency in this country that would underwrite her bail. March 11th, 2020, Mark Mean files to have Edens removed from the case because Edens at that time was presiding over the child protection action, saying it made him biased or prejudiced. So Edens removed himself that same week. No problem. He stepped down. A bondsman who did work with Lori told East Idaho News why they wouldn't work with her ultimately and saying, "It's not about the money. I told her I don't want to write the bond. I'd rather just have this go away and that if she would provide the kids location and provide them with assurance and proof of life, this could go away. She said they did talk about a number of conditions before deciding not to, which included having someone from their company stay with her 24 hours a day, her having to cooperate with police, things like that. The person said, "We take this very seriously, and there's a lot of moving pieces involved in this entire thing." So East Idaho News also on this day releases an enhanced version of that storage unit footage from October 2nd and 3rd and realizes that that wasn't Alex with her on those days, it was Chad. Same day, Rob Wood files a stipulation to continue for more time to go through discovery, and Lori waives her right to a preliminary hearing within a certain time frame. The FBI releases a statement saying the FBI, the Rexburg police, and numerous law enforcement agencies investigating cases related to Lori Vallow and her missing children, JJ and Tylee, are meeting this week in Salt Lake City to coordinate, review, and share information. This is not a new effort. Similar coordination meetings have been routinely conducted since the beginning of these investigations, as sensitive matters may be discussed, and as the investigation remains active and ongoing, we are not providing any further information about the meetings. The meetings were held on March 11th and 12th. And Madison County cancels the hearing for the appointment for a guardian for JJ. You know, it's crazy to go back and kind of see the process of how this initial arrest unfolded. There's a lot of things we forget. So much has happened in the years now that we've been following this case. And sometimes I'm like, I forgot that happened. So March 12th, Tammy Daybell's cell phone is returned from FBI headquarters, unlocked, and they're given a 16 gigabyte SD card that held the extracted data from her phone. A copy of that was given to the case agent. So on the same day, Judge Mallard is replacing Judge Eddins on that case. She becomes the judge. March 16th, the public information officer from the Madison County Jail tells Desert News about Lori being in their facility. Her presence doesn't change our preparation in any way. She gets treated the same as any other inmate we have. March 19th, two of Lori's defense attorneys, Edwina Elcox and Brian Webb, filed a withdrawal as her defense attorneys. They were like, nope. And this leaves Mark Means as the Lone Ranger, as he was for quite a while. Judge Mallard approves the two attorneys stepping down on the 25th of March. So on this same day, investigators from all across the different agencies are emailing saying on a couple of the cases being investigated, they feel they're close to sending some of the things to prosecutors. The person emailing says he knows they're all tired and worn down, but there's still more work to do. And I don't think they knew just how much at that point in March. March 17th, Mark Means makes a statement saying, "In the coming days, we look forward to the opportunity to work through the judicial process to prove Ms. Daybell's innocence." March 18th, and I remember this day thinking, Lord have mercy, Lori's going to think between COVID and this earthquake that happened in Utah that she's right about everything. And even though we knew she wasn't right, it bothered me she would have that satisfaction. I said, she probably thought Zulim is still doing the good work out there. March 19th, documents from Melanie's and Brandon's custody battle are released by Fox 10 Phoenix. And we also learned that Natalie Pulowski found that document on Ian's computer, which in part reads, "Melanie's had been told by Chad and Lori that their children had been possessed. Her children had been possessed and had become zombies." Natalie also says she got texts from Ian in early December saying they made the attempt, talking about Brandon, failed, and told her about it after the fact. "I understand he doesn't want the kids around her because of all this, but I believe if she can see them, it will put a huge dent in her trust with her uncles. She's scared and has been told her two middle children are dead. It's believed the uncles referred to in that are Uncle Alex and Uncle Chad." March 20th, Judge Mallard signs amended order reducing bail and conditions of the release. Bail remains at $1 million. Conditions are the same as Judge Eddins put in place. So March 24th, Means files a new motion for a bond reduction for Lori, saying that new facts have come to light in the case. In the filing, he says they request an argument before Judge Mallard on the matter. March 25th, we're in the height of COVID, and I think that's the reason this case took off a lot the way it did, because a lot of people at this point have been stuck at home for weeks. Inside, you've binged Netflix, you've watched, you've caught up on everything you need to catch up on, and this case is intriguing. So on the 25th, the governor of Idaho issues a statewide stay-at-home order due to COVID-19. The same day, Melanie's has a hearing in Utah on her trespassing charges. And also on this day, her attorney releases a statement. And this is the second statement out of two that got them in big trouble. And they had to pony up millions of dollars to Brandon in a defamation suit he filed. It says, this was March 25th, 2020. Once again, Brandon Boudreau has made unsubstantiated and false accusations, many of which are shown by his own submitted materials. Mr. Robert Jarvis, one of Mr. Pawlowski's lawyers, said of Boudreau's recent court filing, it's also unfortunate his attorney perpetuates his lies in court filings. Attorneys should not be puppets of their clients, but should instead give legal counsel and not file false pleadings. Garrett Smith said Mr. Boudreau continues his, he says, narcissistic attempts to control Ms. Pawlowski, the court, and the public court of public opinion. First, Mr. Smith said, Pawlowski has never been part of a cult. She may understand some of the extremist beliefs of her aunt, Lori Vallow, and Chad Daybell, but that does not mean she's adopted those beliefs as her own. Melanie does not judge those who accept those extremist beliefs, but like she does not judge you or me for what we believe. Melanie holds on to her core beliefs as an active member of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Melanie's husband, Ian Pawlowski, has confirmed to the FBI Ian's summary of information given to law enforcement, written and delivered to Melanie's lawyers, includes his conclusions that Melanie is not part of an extremist group. There's no evidence that Melanie joined that group. Yes, there is. Attended any of the group's activities. Oh, yes, there was proof. Or supported anything to that group. And she did. Law enforcement should be investigating Brandon Boudreau and Ian's ex-wife, Natalie, for illegally obtaining Ian's confidential summary. Second, Mr. Boudreau unlawfully left with and kept their children out of state in Utah, telling American Fork police that his parents' address was his address. He kept the children out of school for about a month. Melanie has never abandoned her children and always intended to have her children with her, providing furnished rooms ready for them in her home in Idaho. She had her children on the lease for her apartment in Rexburg and all her children's belongings, except for the few items she left on her curb at the Arizona residence. Those 12 items included a couple of old twin mattresses, old and broken toys, old clothing. They were certainly not all the children's belongings. The photograph shows 12 items, not all belonging for four children. That is obvious from the photograph. I didn't see that. It all looked like kid stuff to me. Again, Brandon is lying and trying to mislead the court. Even Mr. Boudreau's claim that Melanie packed up in the middle of the night is false and deceptive. Look at the exhibit photograph on the moving van. This was Halloween that night. The moon set at 9 p.m., and you can see the moon almost set in the photograph. They got all scientific in this. We also have a text message stating the packing was almost complete by 10:30 p.m. There are so many blatantly false statements in Brandon's pleadings that this short statement can't address them all, but Lord have mercy, you're kind of addressing them all. Mr. Smith said that if you compare the police statements, the search warrants, and dates and times, you'll see Melanie has fully cooperated with law enforcement. You will also see that Mr. Boudreau has no real evidence of his false allegations. Melanie is not an affiliated party with any criminal act. There's no proof that she is a suspect or anything else. Gilbert Police has stated she is not a suspect in the alleged shooting at Brandon, and that his claims have no supporting evidence that she was part of any alleged illegal act. In fact, Mr. Boudreau's statements about what allegedly happened became progressively more self-serving every time he's told his story. Oh, man, you see why these knuckleheads got sued. Mr. Boudreaux and his attorneys make claims in the court filing that they are clearly not true, and Mr. Boudreaux knows they're not true. His own exhibits, along with additional information that will be provided, will show that as well. Melanie has been victimized by her ex-husband both during her marriage to him and now after. The truth is, Brandon Boudreaux is using their children and making false claims to try to control Melanie's life even now. He is attempting to mislead the court and the public, for which there will be consequences. So combine that with the other press release I just refuse to read because it's so nasty against Brandon, and Brandon totally won that lawsuit. And yeah, Melanie's hasn't been charged in anything. I acknowledge that, but it's not too late, and time's not up, so we'll see. March 27th, 2020, Justin Lum broke this wide open, and this made me scratch my head. Chad inquired about putting a mobile home on his property. This source told Justin that his financing is moving along well, and he used the phone number of the application that he had used registering in Hawaii. Also on this day, an email from Detective Moffitt was leaked. It says, "I'm not sure what is meant by this email. We continue to work on Charles's case and are confident we're getting closer to getting Lori indicted for her involvement in Charles's death. My phone is always on, and I'm here to answer any questions or discussions or any concerns you have." I think he got a little flack because in the documents, you can see everybody kind of ribbing him about his email getting leaked. March 30th, I always thought this was super cool. Lamar Advertising donates missing kids billboards with Tylee and JJ's photos that are placed on main roads around Rexburg and near Yellowstone. The same day, March 30th, Lori's apartment in Rexburg is placed on the market again, and Chandler PD issues a search warrant for the email account that Lori created to send that fraudulent email to Chad, where she pretended to be Charles, asking Chad to come to Arizona to help him ghostwrite a book that didn't exist. They also sent a search warrant for Charles's iCloud accounts. So I think we'll end there. And so this is all stuff we kind of know, but I think it's important with the mega series. I decided to still kind of do a timeline of what happened. And just so later on down the road, we can come back and compare. It's interesting to hear again kind of what was happening behind the scenes, knowing what we know now. And so I'm not sure when I'll get another one in. I'm trying to sort of space them apart now. We are kind of getting towards the judicial process of it. And but we will in depth finish this up to where we are when that last episode is recorded. And then periodically we'll add to it as things progress in this case. In the meantime, hope you guys have a good rest of your weekend, and we will see you soon.